The civic engagement group known as Warm Cookies of the Revolution celebrated its 10th birthday yesterday with an event in downtown Denver. Warm Cookies, as it's known for short, seeks to demystify the civic engagement process by breaking down barriers to participation while providing a sense of welcome familiarity. One of the more recent initiatives born from the collective is a pilot program for participatory budgeting. That's when citizens help to decide the spending priorities of their city. At the event, I spoke with two people engaged in the process. One is Warm Cookies strategist Roshan Bliss, and the other is Denver City Councilwoman Candy Sedebaca. Sedebaca said Denver's exploration with a participatory budgeting process started as a living room conversation between her and Warm Cookies founder Evan Weissman.
We were talking about how to get people to understand what was going on initially with Ditch the Ditch, the I-70 expansion. And I had just gotten into office, or I think it was right before office, I was planning to run. But we were also trying to bring some power back to the people in decision making. And so we were trying to figure out, how do we teach people how the budget works? And Evan had this crazy idea about a Rube Goldberg machine.
What is that?
It's those machines like where you like drop a little, what are those little weights, those balls, a pinball or something, and then it like goes down and hits a thing and then that and that and all of this stuff to just like at the end crack an egg or do something silly. But we wanted to create a really large scale one. And so we decided to go ask for some money from Art Place America and fund this big art project that was a metaphor for the budget process of a city. And we turned my garage into a Rube Goldberg machine.
And Roshan, you are involved with Warm Cookies. You've worked with Councilwoman Sedebaca. How do you kind of act as the go-between between community and a position of power?
We are still figuring that out all the time, but in lots of ways, it's to use my and several other people, Myra Gonzalez and Joey Haar, two other consultants who have worked with me and Warm Cookies in the city to move this participatory budgeting process. But we try to take our community connections and use them to bring folks in who we know are already in groups that are often overlooked or underrepresented, and try to make sure that they get to participate, because we know that in the regular flows of the everyday, the rest of the city's processes, there are some folks who are just kind of the usual suspects, you know, who people who are engaged, who for many different sociological reasons find it easy or want to and are effective at participating. It's really about going and using our knowledge, our relationships, our understandings of the parts of the communities that don't have the same access and have some more barriers in between them and participation, to lower those barriers and try to make sure that they're built in to the process of actually participating with real underrepresented neighborhoods. And one of those great examples is something that the Councilwoman and Warm Cookies helped make happen, which is the mini grants process, where we actually gave small grants to community organizations and even individual well-connected people in our community neighborhoods that wanted to help get their folks involved. So lots of different ways, but it's really about building relationships.
What have been some of the priorities identified in your community conversations?
I think there's two layers to this, because when we did the Rube Goldberg machine, it was paired with a piloting process of a participatory budgeting simulation in a middle school and a college. And we, at that time, you know, I think we heard some of the things that came up in the actual city budgeting process, and it was everything from people wanting, you know, painted chess tables at every park in the city to, you know, stop signs and stop lights and crosswalks and some of those basic infrastructure needs that a lot of disadvantaged communities are deprived of. But I think I didn't pay attention as much to the other parts of the city that were telling us what they wanted. So you can speak more to that, what other people wanted. But it always felt very basic infrastructure-ish to me.
I'm also curious about the education aspect of it. Priorities and also educating people about what all goes into getting your priorities onto the table.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, some other priorities that we noticed were places and spaces where people can play, where especially young people from, you know, kind of little kids to teenagers have safe areas. So it was parks, playgrounds. Folks really, really wanted some like water playground, like a sort of small
splash
water
pad,
park, splash pad. And it was really too bad that it was just too expensive, more beyond the budget that we had. But yeah, lots of spaces for people to just be and spend good time, meet their neighbors and have see their kids literally thriving and flourishing. Some of the education stuff that we did was, it was tough because we were still like coming out of the pandemic. This really like should have happened in 2020, but there were some other things that took precedence that year. So it was still a lot of virtual and online outreach, but we did a lot of, as many as we could, small events with both city partners like libraries, but also community groups. Those mini grantees helped us host, just integrate idea collection and education about what the PBA process is like into their already happening community events. And Warm Cookies, you know, like helped us plan several of those. And there's so much room to grow in terms of the outreach and communication, which is why I'm glad we're talking on the radio about it. But we tried as much as we could to get people on social media, in person, and through kind of open town hall virtual events.
And speaking of outreach and communication, if people want to, are hearing this and say, hey, I want to know more about this, how can they find out?
I'm biased, but I would say the first place to start is watching your city council meetings that happen every Monday night starting at 5:30. I really began a mass community education process of the city budget before the actual participatory budgeting project kicked off. And so I think the best way to know what we're already spending money on, what we're not spending money on, is to just tune into what we're voting to sign checks for every Monday night. And then that will help them be a more informed citizen when they come to the table for a project. I think one of my biggest realizations throughout this process is that our parameters limit what people are spending money on to infrastructure projects. And those are not always the top things that people are asking us to spend money on. And so I think that, you know, I would love to see us evolve our city budgeting process to an entirely participatory process. But that requires people to not just know about the thing that's missing in their community, but also know what are we working with? What are we devoting resources to? Where could we be cutting resources from to reallocate those dollars?
And is it just your office, or are there other people on city council participating in this effort?
I would say right now it's only my office that's very active in this and that has been actively trying to engage the public in a co-governing situation. But we have 5 open seats on council in April of this coming year, and hopefully we get 5 council members who also want to co-govern and see participatory budgeting scaled up for our whole budget.
And to take it back to this whole idea of demystifying and lowering the barriers and saying, hey, this can actually be something that you or your neighbor or your friends can do. How did, coming from an activist background, taking power, how did that affect your way of governing, of informing the public while you're holding that seat of power and reaching out to potentially recruit others to follow in your footsteps?
I was never the person who saw this job in my path. And I think the movement community selected me for this job. And so it comes with, when you're selected by community, it comes with expectations that I bring that community with me to every single city council meeting. And so what I know about my governance style is that when I sit on that dais and vote, it's because my community has already told me how they want me to vote. It's not I vote how I want to vote and then tell them how I voted. It's the other way around. And I think that kind of built-in accountability mechanism comes with being selected from the movement to represent community versus the other way around, which is often what we see in traditional politics.
Those are my questions. Is there anything else that you want to add that I didn't touch on that needs stating?
I guess just people can find out more on the city's website if they go to about the Denver PB process and where it's going next at bit.ly/DenverPB. And it's a great place to learn more about what's going on and hear more about the results, which should be announced next week.
I've been speaking with Roshan Bliss, a strategist for the participatory budgeting process, on behalf of Warm Cookies of the Revolution and Councilwoman Candace Cedar-Baca. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks a lot, folks. Stay involved.